Perhaps they thought they could keep it secret, but a couple of years ago, Atlantic magazine listed hundreds of thousands of books, histories, novels, textbooks, the lot, that had been fed into AI's large language models. With a few keystrokes, writers could find if they were among the robbed. One of the robbed was New York-based queer thriller writer Andrea Bartz. She and some fellow writers then began a class action against the AI company responsible for the theft of their work, Anthropic. The result is the biggest payout ever in a United States copyright dispute. In Australian dollars, $2.28 billion to 500,000 authors. Perhaps it's a model for the world. Andrea Bartz joins me from the United States. Welcome to Late Night Live.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me.
Pleased with the result?
I mean, yes, I think the settlement is fair. I think it's a first step, and I think it's a really important one in an industry that has, you know, not really faced any regulation until now.
What were the companies, the AI companies, actually doing?
Sure. So in the case of Anthropic, they knew that they needed tons and tons and tons of data in order to train their algorithm, in order to make it quote unquote smart. And so they needed high quality content. And some other people had stolen all of our books and, you know, made them in digital form and just put them on the internet for anyone to take, really making it clear that these were pirated. This was not, you know, this was a little bit shady legally, but here's the stuff. So we now know from discovery that some people at Anthropic saw that, discussed it, decided it was sort of worth the risk of just taking it, and they fed that into their algorithm in order to create an early version of what would eventually become Claude, their chatbot. So it was a way of learning how to use data to actually create, you know, a product that's now familiar to a lot of people as something you can kind of chat with.
But the first step was the theft by somebody else.
That's correct.
Somebody who had taken a hard copy of the book and put it on the internet.
What they probably did was take an ebook and sort of strip it of the stuff that makes it non-copyable, and then upload that as a file, sort of strip it down to a TXT file and then upload that into this huge data set of hundreds of thousands of books.
Did it make a difference to the legal outcome here that shenanigans was at the start of the process? Would the outcome have been different if this company had just gone to just a book firm, bought a download and taken it from there?
So that's a really interesting question, because the judge in this case, and of course there are dozens of different, you know, copyright lawsuits against AI companies that are working their way through the courts now, and so this is just one. In the case of this lawsuit, the judge declared that, you know, if they had obtained this stuff legally and used that to train their algorithm, that would be fine. And indeed, what Anthropic did, which I think shows sort of their culpability, if anything, is that after they had spent some time learning from, you know, this algorithm they'd created and this large language model, they said, this feels a little sketchy that we did this on pirated books. This might get us in trouble down the line. And so they paid tons of money for people to go out and buy hundreds of thousands of books in mostly used form. So again, the authors didn't see a dollar, but they picked up used books. And then they paid people to take an X-Acto knife to strip the spine from the books and to scan them page by page for the entirety of the book in order to create a, quote, digital library. Now, the judge in this case declared that that was fair use and that was not considered making an illegal copy because they bought one copy and were left with one digital copy. I strongly disagree with that for a number of reasons, but that was what happened in the case of this one lawsuit.
Right. So that this magnificent settlement that you've won doesn't actually establish that the AI companies can't gobble up a legally obtained copy of someone's work.
That's correct. So this settlement is exclusively about the theft, the pirated books that they took and that they used. I mean, I'm very hopeful that, again, this is a first step, and I'm very hopeful that there's going to be other lawsuits and other rulings that sort of jibe with our sensibilities and, you know, rationality a little bit more. But in this case, this is not forward thinking. Another important thing to note is that this doesn't give them any future permission to continue. They have to destroy that trove of pirated books, and that doesn't give them permission to use those ebooks in particular. So it's not a license. It's not moving forward in that sense.
Right.
But you are correct that the judge declared it fair use for them to take legally obtained books and feed them in.
It's a complicated area. Andrea, let's go back. What was your what was your response when you found your books there?
I felt incredibly violated. I felt like my most sort of intimate possession, my, you know, intellectual property had been stolen from me. And there was something just additionally infuriating about the fact that, you know, as you mentioned, it was just one of hundreds of thousands that got gobbled up by this algorithm in a fraction of a second. You know, it really bothers me if somebody steals one of my books from, you know, a pirated source because they want to listen to it on audiobook and they don't want to pay for it. But this is like an algorithm spent a fraction of a second on it. And I worked for, you know, 5 or 10 years on it. I poured my heart and soul into it. I did deep thinking and a lot of feeling and, you know, expressing vulnerability. You know everything it takes to write a book. So just knowing that it had been stolen for these purposes of making a big tech company unfathomably wealthy and to create this algorithm that could ultimately compete on the market with my works was infuriating on every level.
You must have moved very quickly to start a court action because not a lot of time has passed.
It's pretty remarkable. I reached out to the law firm that had been one of the law firms involved in the OpenAI suit with authors, which is still working its way through the courts. But that one is quite famous. It has a lot of sort of blockbuster name brand authors attached as named plaintiffs. I had reached out because I was ticked off, like you said, and wanted to be just involved. And so it wasn't until somebody from Anthropic actually spoke about how they had used one of these databases that the law firm reached back out and said, you know, I think there's a case here. Would you be interested in suing, basically? So I signed on with really no idea that it was going to become a landmark suit. And in some ways, you know, gallop ahead of some of the other litigation that was already working its way through the courts. But it was an unexpected speed, but it was, you know, an outcome that I really hoped for and felt was necessary.
It certainly galloped ahead because, you know, you have a settlement now and it's only a year or so down the track. These cases can go on for 10 years. Is it because the AI company realized they had made that terrible little mistake at the start that they were never going to be able to defend? And the best thing to do, though it seems a huge amount of money, the best thing to do was to just get this off the books.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I'm not really able to speculate on what was going on in the minds of the defendants, right? But, you know, there was a really highly motivated judge who was really engaged in the topic and was kind of the one challenging everyone to keep moving forward. There were lawyers putting in an incredible amount of work. And I suspect, though I can't prove, that what you're saying is correct. I don't imagine Anthropic would settle or come to the table to discuss a settlement if the writing wasn't on the wall. And, you know, from where I sit, I think what they did was quite egregious, and it was sort of the best outcome for everyone.
But the judge seems to have said that if they'd paid Amazon Books $10 to get a legitimate downloaded copy, they might then have been able to argue that they turned that book into something else, and that therefore they had something of their own that they could defend the existence of, that they had transformed your work into something else. Is that what the judge was hinting at?
Yeah, that was my understanding of the judge's declaration that, you know, the work was transformative. And so it is considered fair use to feed a legally obtained work of art into the algorithm. Obviously, I disagree. I'm hopeful that in the future that there's going to be more clarity on that, because I don't think it's right personally.
There seems to be an argument in this country, and I don't know whether it cropped up in your case, that copyright law defends the physical expression of things. And if an AI company gobbles up your book and mm-hmm. puts it out in some other form, then only your ideas have been taken, and anybody can read your book, read your book and take those ideas. So can an AI company take your ideas and make something else of them? Is that an mm-hmm. argument that came up in your litigation?
Yeah. So from reading sort of the judge's decisions about parts of the lawsuit that he was throwing out, that was one of them where he compared an AI algorithm, a large language model, gobbling up all of our books to a school child who is going to read lots of different books and then sort of learn from them in order to create their own books and their own writing in the future. I think the differences between the two are so obvious and apparent, and I don't agree with that decision at all, but it is part of the judge's logic in declaring it fair use. They're not spitting out the exact same thing as your book, and so how is it different from somebody reading a bunch of books to learn from them and learn to write their own books?
On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live, and I'm David Marr. My guest is the thriller writer, Andrea Bartz. Andrea, how did you acquire how many 100,000 fellow litigants here?
So this being a class action, it sort of goes in the other direction. So something I do want to clarify is that both authors and publishers are part of the class.
Indeed.
And so it's a big group with a lot of parties. The reason that we ended up with this 500,000 is that in discovery, we learned that the works pulled from the internet, a pirated database and fed into the algorithm, number about 500,000. So it wasn't until the works list was released, which just happened, I believe, at the beginning of the month or maybe last month, that people even found out if their books were in it or not. There's no guarantee that if your book is in the Atlantic's searchable database, for example, that Anthropic actually stole it. So with this being a class action suit, we are representing everyone who had their work stolen, but we didn't even know exactly who that would entail until the process of discovery. So that was how we ended up representing close to, I think it's 482,000 works.
And how much is everybody going to get of this huge settlement once the lawyers are paid and the money is there?
Yeah, it's hard to say exactly because it will depend on such things as how many people file claims, how many people opt out. There's a lot of math that we don't know yet and won't know until the spring. There's also going to be the lawyer's payment, which won't be determined until the spring and expenses taken out. What we're hearing is that the number should be somewhere around $3,000 per work, and how that will be divided between the author and the publisher will sort of depend on the category that the work is in. So, for example, I'm a trade author. I imagine you are as well. In most cases, that means that at least here in the States, we signed contracts saying that if our copyright was infringed and both parties proceed jointly, the publisher and the author, that any damages would be split. So the default is going to be 50-50 for trade authors. But that's only a default. And if people's contracts say something different, they can make the case for something different.
But Andrea, mm-hmm. you're a writer. How much time have you lost by throwing yourself into this litigation?
Oh my goodness. I need to never, ever think about my hourly rate on this because, you know, it's I only have two books ultimately that Anthropic stole. So that's a few thousand dollars there. And the hours sunk into it, particularly in the last 5 to 6 weeks before the preliminary approval hearing, are just, I had to put on hold all of my other work. I had to miss my other deadlines. I had to stop working on my next novel. And for 5 or 6 weeks, I was doing 40 or 50 hours a week of just meetings and writing things and reviewing things and talking to different stakeholders. So the sort of, you know, finish line was really, really intense. And before that, it was more of a steady but manageable trickle of discovery and being deposed and that kind of thing.
But it's more than time, isn't it? It just, to be involved in litigation just absorbs all of your attention.
I did not expect the sort of emotional and cognitive toll of being involved in it. It's sort of cognitively draining at every turn. And it was a really important and personal case to me. I cared so much about, you know, my books, all the other books that were stolen. And so I and the other two lead plaintiffs who, you know, Charles Graber and Kirk Wallace Johnson, they put in exactly as much work as I did. The three of us really wanted to get it right. And so I don't ever need to be a lead plaintiff again. It was exhausting, but I'm really glad I was able to do this.
This is an important step, this case. And a large sum of money is being paid to a large number of authors. But what seems a large sum of money to us is not actually much money to the company you were suing. I'm wondering whether in the AI world, cases like this are just a business expense.
It's a great question. And you know, I completely understand that kind of thinking and the, oh, this is a speeding ticket, or you should have held out for more, or you should have, you know, gone to trial for it. I hear all of that. But I think it's really important that we got this first step. And if we had gone to trial, we A, could have lost, but B, even if we had won, it's entirely possible that nobody would have seen a dime in the class.
What do you know?
Thank you.
What do you know about the other big cases that are also on foot against the AI companies? Where are they? Do you know?
I have been watching, obviously, the high profile one with OpenAI versus a bunch of different authors. Last I heard, they're just getting deposed now, which I believe we were all deposed last March. So again, it's moving on a slower scale. It's enormous. It's got a lot of name brands involved. But I have been pretty laser focused on this case. And so I'm not a real expert on the other ones.
Well, we shall be keeping an eye on that big case as it proceeds, because the impact around the world for authors, writers, and artists is just so enormous. Thank you for joining us on Late Night Live. Congratulations on your victory. And thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you so much.
I've been talking to Andrea Bartz, queer thriller writer. Her latest book is called The Last Ferry Out, and she was one of the driving forces behind this immense litigation against an AI company that has been robbing about 500,000 writers of their work.